Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the George Gordon School of Common Law at Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the learning from current events right after this. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow three basic rules. It's called location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or government agents, and that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is, all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make these kinds of short, terse statements like these. Now listen to this first judge. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? That comes from a case called U.S. versus Dickerson. Now, if I had said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester, wouldn't I? Now, listen to this second judge. He said, now you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. He said that in Belknap versus United States. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now, listen to what this third judge had to say. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of the archives page at georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about current events. The biggest current event going on right now is the oil spill. Last time we were talking about, when we broke off, we're talking about how much do these oil wells earn? How much do they make? Why is it that we're drilling oil wells out here in the ocean a mile deep? Well, they're extremely valuable. They're extremely profitable. And the first time I'd heard about this deep sea drilling was probably 10 years ago when it came to my attention that they had a well that was producing 15,000 barrels a day out in the Gulf of Mexico. And I thought, wow, 15,000 barrels a day. And remember, these wells produce this under pressure. When you drill an oil well here on land, here in the United States anyway, you have to pump the oil out. Now, once in a while, they'll come up with what they call a gusher. Maybe you've seen that in the grade B movies, you know, like Tulsa, you know, they'd drill a well and they'd, back in the 20s or the early 1900s, and they'd get a gusher. Well, those are kind of few and far between, but the general rule of thumb is, here in the States, when you drill a well, you've got to pump it out, and it takes 17% of the energy that comes out of the ground to pump it out. So It's cheaper to drill the well here on land, no doubt about that, and it doesn't take the technological marvel that it does to drill one out in the deep ocean. But they started drilling offshore after World War II, primarily, and off the coast of Louisiana, and they found, wow, this is very profitable. So in the shallow continental shelves, you know, where the water is 300 feet deep or less, they drilled a lot of wells, made a lot of money, and so over time they've progressively worked out a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper. And so back in the 1960s, the Russians lost a submarine, a nuclear submarine, and Howard Hughes, who used to run the Hughes Tool Company, went to President Nixon and he said, you know, I've got an idea here, and I think I could build a ship and go out there and pick up that nuclear submarine that the Russians lost off the bottom of the ocean. Now, that would have been a real prize. So they built a ship called the Glomar Explorer. It had a big oil well derrick in the middle of it. And the bottom of the ship was a hole. And they went down and they didn't get the whole submarine, but they got part of it. And they got some very important information from it. And the Russians were never suspicious. Well, evidently weren't suspicious because they thought, well, this is a technological experiment. They're out here trying to drill an oil well in deep water. And from that, back in the late 60s and early 70s, you know, there's been technology developed. And now down at Mobile Bay, for instance, I mean, they've got humongous oil rigs that they're building or have built. And they take them out and they put them on site, and they've got propellers all the way around the ship so that they can, with GPS location, they can keep that ship on station right over that oil well, and they can drill a mile down. And this oil well that they drilled down here is 4 miles deep. 4 miles deep off of a platform that they have to hold in position by the internal operation of the ship while they're drilling this well. Now that's, you know, you talk about technology, now that's pretty spectacular. Well, now, when we take a look at the value of this well is producing 50,000 barrels a day. Now, they've got 400 of these wells operating. They don't tell us how much they're getting out of these wells. That's like a trade secret. We know about what's coming out of this well, and so now you can extrapolate that anywhere from 15 to 50,000 barrels a day. This one at 50,000 barrels a day, at $70 a barrel, just take 50,000 times 70. That thing is producing $3.5 million a day. That's how much oil comes out of there. Now, in ordinary circumstances, they'll put a pipeline from that well into shore, and they'll just let the oil flow out of that well, and they'll turn the valve on or off, and they'll just run into the refinery somewhere there in Louisiana. So once they've drilled the well, from that point on, there's not much in the way of maintenance, and the costs that are involved are already bought and paid for. Now it's payday. And these wells produce so much, they call them commercial wells, as opposed to an ordinary oil well. Commercial, these things really pay. Now, if you took that $3.5 million a day and just multiply that times 365 days in a year, that's $1.277 billion a year. Now, how much is $1.275 billion, $1.25 billion a year? Well, the ship that they lost out there, it was called an Explorer, a drilling rig. They had it insured for $535 million. The company that owned it is a drilling company. BP didn't own the drilling rig. They hired it. The drilling company gets $1 million a day for the use of the boat. Now, they didn't pay $535 million to build that drilling rig. They paid something less than that, but they insured it for $535 million. So you can rest assured that everything's all right. The insurance company is going to pay for that. They're going to get a new drilling rig. But that's pretty profitable, because what's the life expectancy of the drilling rig? Well, it's 30 years. A ship lasts about 30 years, and that's what that is. It's a ship. And they can drill about 3 or 4 wells a year, and they get paid $1 million a well. It doesn't make any difference to them, or $1 million a day. It doesn't make any difference to them whether they drill it in 100 days or 30 days or 90 days or a year. It doesn't make any difference. They're just hiring out and drilling a hole in the ground. So they can pay for that ship in about a year and a half. And then from then on, you know, they're making money. They've paid for the thing, and that's the goal of it. Now, the next profitability comes from the drilling of the well. Now, this well here, at some point in time, they'll get the thing capped, and they'll get a pipe on it, and they'll start pumping off of it. The lifespan of these wells is about 30 years. If you go up to Prudhoe Bay, and remember, they started drilling up there in 1968, and they've been pumping out of there now for more than 30 years. Now, they don't pump. They just hook a pipe onto it and open the valve. Once they get the thing hooked up, you know, it's pretty automatic from that point on. But now, look at how much money comes out of that well. In 30 years, this 1.277 totals out to be $38.31 billion. That's how much they can expect gross out of this hole. How much does it cost to drill the well? Well, it's about $100 million. Some of them cost a little more, but some of them a little less. Now, this one here, let's assume that it cost $310 million. That's that 0.31. Then they're expecting to make $38 billion off of this investment of $100, $200, or $300 million, aren't they? Well, now that's about 38,000%. And, you know, this is going to go on for 30 years. That's not quite 1,000% a year. It's 900 and some odd percent a year return on their money. That's why they want to drill these wells out in this deep water, because they are just god-awful productive and just god-awful profitable. Now, they've drilled 400 of these deep wells out there so far. That's the numbers that we've come up with. And then they've never had a hitch. Everything's worked perfectly. And on this one, there wasn't any reason for there to be a problem with this well until somebody at the BP side came to the conclusion that they needed to replace the drilling mud with seawater, which is not the approved procedure. And the people on the drilling rig, the people that are operating the drilling rig, told them that this is not correct. This isn't the way to do this. And whoever it was, whoever the BP official was, is the guy that caused this accident, because he said, that's what we're going to do. And they wanted to cut some corners, save some time, and get the job done so that they could get on to the next drilling project. Maybe they were running a little behind time. Now, an extra $10 million, $20 million, $30, $50 million on a job like this is just chicken feed. Chicken feed compared to the profitability of this well. Even if it didn't produce 50,000 barrels a day and it was only producing 15,000 barrels a day, it would still be an immensely profitable operation. But this one is going to turn into a fiasco. They're not only not going to make any money, they're going to lose their shirt. And at some point in time, the BP company, when all these bills come up, you know, today they're talking about BP is going to pay for all of this. Listen, these corporations have never paid in the past. They're not paying now, and there isn't any reason to believe that they're going to pay in the future. Now, you just saw what happened with the financial industry when they made all of these bad loans and drove our economy into the ground. Guess who's paying for that? You guessed it. Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife's paying for it with their taxes. Now, the way this deal works here is that the company will file for Chapter 11 at some point down the road. They'll go into bankruptcy like United Airlines did, Continental Airlines. And they'll be in bankruptcy for a while until they divest themselves of all of these claims. And then once they've divested themselves of all the claims, well, then the bankruptcy court will discharge them out and they'll go back to business as usual. That's all. No fuss and no muss. But they can't do that until after all the claims come in. So BP will sit here and then they'll start paying off claims and they'll be very slow about it. And they're not gonna be rapid, but they'll be paying claims and they will be amassing money. They'll be amassing the debt until they finally come to a point where, oh, okay, now this is to a point where we can't pay this, and so now let's bankrupt out of it. Now, that's the way it's always worked in the past, and there isn't any reason to believe that that isn't the way it's going to work in the future. Now, the oil well is worth $38 billion in over 30 years. That's based upon what we know it produces right now. The life of the well is 30 years. And that's based upon historical averages. The cost to drill the well is about $100 million, which isn't very much. On land, it costs maybe $20 million to drill a well. Sometimes it's $5, $10, $15, $20 million to drill a well. The deepest well ever drilled in New Mexico a few years back was 28,000 feet. I understand the other day I picked up a number, and I think the new record is around 32 or 33,000. This well was getting down there. It was 23,000 feet, 18,000 feet through the rock, 5,000 feet through the water. The cause of the blowout was created by a BP executive who said, we want to save some money and take a shortcut here. The drilling rig was insured for $538 million, so that'll be replaced. And it brings up another little side issue over here that I don't think anybody's talked about, but it's called cavitation. Cavitation. Up at Boulder Dam or Hoover Dam there outside Las Vegas, one time the lake filled up and they needed to discharge some water through an overflow pipe. So they have several of those. In case that happens, they can divert the water so it doesn't build up and go over the top of the dam. So there's a tunnel that goes through the solid rock. And the tunnel that goes through the solid rock is, I think, if I remember right, was 16 feet in diameter. It might be 24 feet in diameter or 12 feet. Don't quote me on that, but it's big. It's so big you can just drive a truck right through it, through the tunnel. Well, anyway, the thing is opened up and they get the thing running at full blast or so, and they notice that there's some rumbling going on. There's a tremendous volume of water going through here. It's coming from the top and running downhill through the rock, and it discharges down at the bottom into the river. And the mountain is kind of shaken. And they noted that down, said, hey, that's a lot of water going through there, and it actually is so much of a volume of water going through this 16-foot tube, which is just cut right straight through the rock, just like drilling a tunnel through. That it was shaken, and red color was coming out of the discharge. And so this went on for a couple, 3 months. The water finally goes down. And so when they shut it off, they went down in to take a look at it, and then it had cavitated. Cavitation is what they call that. That's C-A-V-A-T-A-T-I-O-N, cavitation. That's when water pressure and fluid water traveling at high velocity goes through a tunnel or a rock, and it just eats it out. So the tunnel wasn't 16 feet in diameter anymore. It was as big as a cavern. They could drive trucks down through there. And I forgot how much it took. It was 300,000 or 400,000 cubic yards of cement that they had to put into that hole to fill it back up, you know, to where they had a tube going through there again. Now, I don't know if this well has been cased all the way down. Here in the Ozarks, when we drill a well, we don't case it. We just use the stone. It goes through rock. these are water welds here, and they drilled a couple of them for me here a few years back, and the driller explained that to me, and I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. Now, if they hit a cave or something like that, now they have to case it. That means they put a pipe down through that, and that's quite a little process. Doubles the price of your of your well. But ordinarily they don't do that. And so I'm kind of wondering if they have cased that well or if they just drilled it, and they're using the rock that they drilled through as the pipe, as the tube for the oil to come up. Remember, it comes up under pressure. So we're not talking about dropping a pump down the well here to pump it up. We're just talking about opening up a hole there so that it can be forced out under natural pressure. So if that's the case and it's coming up under 6,200 pounds of pressure, and up here at the wellhead coming out that 19-inch pipe, you got 6,000 pounds of pressure. That's coming up very rapidly, and it more than likely will eat out that hole. Now, there's a report circulating around right now that around the well there are three other plumes of oil coming up out of the seabed. Now, that tells us then that there is oil coming up out of that formation 3 miles down, and it's coming up through cracks in the rock, and it's leaking into the seabed, apart from this main source, which is the wellhead itself. Now, if that's the case, it's probably being done by cavitation, and at some point in time, that is going to eat out a hole as it comes up. Now, just picture this. There's about a 8 or 12-inch hole below that 19-inch pipe that goes down 3 miles to the pool of oil. Now, a rock gets kicked loose down at the bottom, and it shoots up at the rate of several hundred miles an hour. It's shooting up through that hole. And it's under this tremendous pressure. Every time that rock hits the side of that hole coming up, it dislodges a rock or two. And then that rock or two starts shooting up, and it hits the side of the walls, and it knocks loose a wall, a rock or two. And these rocks, as they're getting knocked off, they hit each other, they bang around in there, and they go into solution. I mean, this thing is so powerful, so much pressure. It reduces the rock, as it did at Hoover Dam, to a liquid. It just liquefies it, kind of like volcanic lava. And it comes out the other end. Now, it was red when it was coming out of Hoover Dam, and I noticed that this oil slick up on top here is red, and ordinarily oil is black. Have you ever noticed that? So I don't know what that means, and I haven't heard anybody report on that. That cavitation now is a phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon. It's well documented. It's well known, but it takes tremendous pressure to do that. Pressure and speed. And boy, that oil well's got pressure and speed. Now, if it's coming up through pipe, I think we'd probably be pretty safe. But if it's coming up through the rock, I'm not sure how long they're going to have to get that thing shut off and before it goes past critical mass and you've eaten out a hole something like 8 inches. You could have holes and pockets in there that could be as big as trucks, and then maybe as big as houses, and then maybe it could be hundreds of feet in one direction or another. And then you could break into fissures in the rock in various locations, which then have holes or tunnels that come up to the surface, and you could unleash that whole oil pool down there, which is a possibility, because on the McLaughlin report last week, in fact it was last Friday, John McLaughlin said, has it occurred to anybody that they might not be able to shut that thing off and that it might run its course? So how much oil is down there to come out? Boy, that's quite a little number. If you were to take that number and just multiply it out, it's 547 million acre feet. See, it's there's 320,000 gallons in 1 acre foot. Now, an acre foot is 43,560 square feet. So if you've got 1 foot of water sitting on 1 acre, 43,560 square feet, 1 foot deep in water, you've got 1 acre foot of water. And that's quite a bit. Now, 1 cubic foot of water is 7.5 gallons. So if you had 43,560 times 7.5, you'd have 326,700 gallons of water. Now, these oil pools that they're tapping into are veritable lakes of oil. To give you an idea how big they are, the National Geographic had a special back in 1982, and it was a special edition that just dealt with oil. And they gave us some pretty good insights into the oil industry and oil pools and one thing and another. And they said at that time the world had about 1 trillion barrels of oil. Now, the truth of the matter is there are many, many, many trillions of barrels of oil in the world. And like this pool here, see, until they drilled down into it, they didn't know they had it. But now they know they've got one down there, don't they? Now, how big is this pool of oil down there? Well, we don't know. I mean, it may be as big as Lake Mead, or it may be, 1, 2, or 5 square miles or something. We don't know. But there's ways that these oil people have, of figuring this out. So they drill 3 or 4 wells down there, then they measure the pressure off these wells and how fast the pressure is going down. And they can pretty well tell you about how big this oil field is going to be, or how big this formation is going to be. Now, in the estimation of the trillion barrels of oil, well, I calculated that out one time. So for those of you people down there in Las Vegas, Nevada, now listen to this. If you took a trillion barrels of oil and put it into Lake Mead, that's how much oil proven reserves are ready right now to pump out of the ground. It would encompass that Lake Mead. Now, how many of those Lake Meads are there in the world? Well, there's 6 that we know of. 6 separate oil fields or oil producing areas that have oil in the trillion barrel range. And National Geographic spelled it out and said, here's where it's located and blah, blah, blah. Now, the oil industry, they deny that, and they're constantly telling us that the oil is a finite resource and we're going to run out of it. And that's probably true. I wouldn't doubt that. I could go along with that. That in the world, there's only so much gold in the ground, and it's a finite resource, and when you dig it all out, it's all dug out. I would question whether somebody had dug it all out. There's a lot of places we haven't looked yet, and there's a lot of places that we haven't looked for oil yet, and right now, they're not really trying to get oil outside of these big commercial pools. Now, let me give you an illustration. Up in North Dakota, in 1951, they discovered an oil pool up there. And they got a name for it, like the Jones Oil Pool or the Jacobs Oil Pool or whatever it is. And they drilled a few wells up there, and they got the pressures off of it. And they said, okay, this formation extends over this period or over this size piece of real estate. And it's got about 0.5 trillion barrels of oil in it. It's a small one. It's only got 0.5 trillion. Now, to give you an idea as to how much oil is in a trillion barrels, the world today uses a little less than 30 billion barrels a year. Now, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So if we took 1,000 and divided that by 30, you'd have a 33.33-year supply of oil. So the oil industry worldwide keeps about a 33-year supply of oil on hand, has, you know, for the last 30 or 40 years that I know of, at least since 1980. So, you know, 30 years. They've kept a 33-year supply of oil. Now, that's a pretty good inventory. And now they come to us and they say, well, now, see, the world's going to run out of oil in 33 years, and that's why it's so expensive. Okay, well, here's another location for oil. Up in Alberta, they have what they call the Alberta tar sands, which now they've discovered goes over into Saskatchewan. And they used to think that they had a trillion barrels of oil there. Well, they've had to revamp that. Now they've got 4 trillion barrels, and they're still finding more of it. So that 4 trillion barrels that's there, that's now proven reserves. Of course, it doesn't just flow out of the ground. They got to dig it out and haul the stuff to the... It's quite a little process, and it costs quite a bit more to produce it. But I'm just pointing out, you know, the world's not running out of oil. That's my point. They've got 4 trillion barrels. That's just the Canadians. Now, they've got other oil up there. Up around the Arctic Circle, you know, they were talking about punching some holes in the ground. And the ecologists, you know, and the bird watchers and one thing and another said, oh, my God, no, we can't do that. There's one hole up there. There's one little patch got 6 billion barrels in it. Well, in 1982, when National Geographic made this survey, they figured that around the Arctic Circle, the biggest catches were over in Siberia and on the Russian side. But on the Canadian and American side, that's Alaska and the Canadian North. Okay. There's another 8 trillion barrels around the Arctic Rim. 8 trillion barrels around the Arctic Rim. Okay, so you Canadians got 4 billion in your tar sands. And then, I don't know how much your share of that 8 trillion barrels is. Now, most of it's over on the Rusky side, no doubt about that. But over on our side, there's several big pools over there that they've discovered and they know about. And so, they've been thinking about developing those. Now, that's quite a bit of oil, but now there's another big catch down in the Four Corners area here in the United States. In Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. I guess that's not down around Four Corners. That's probably up around Three Corners, I guess. But they're estimating 3.6 trillion barrels of oil up there, and that's called, not tar sands. They got another name for that. It slips my mind right now. They got a name. And that's where we used to get our oil in the early days, you know, before 1900. They'd go up there, and it's right there in the rocks. And then they were talking about tapping that. But you see, the oil companies, they're not dummies. You got to give these guys credit where credit's due. The oil companies do not want to produce oil at $30 a barrel and then sell it for $70. When they can produce oil for 50 cents a barrel and sell it for 70. And I think that's just good business. And I think that makes all the sense in the world. Hey, it's halfway time. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And we are sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're taking a look here at current events, and the number one current event at this moment in time is this oil spill. Last time I raised the issue of, gee, is this a black flag operation? It's being conducted in such a way that it makes me think that the people in charge here are really not serious. So, that being the, you know, my gut reaction, we'll let the thing play out and we'll see where we're going. But I was just talking to you about how much oil there is in the world. Now, the oil industry has been telling us that it's a finite resource, we're running out of oil, and that's not true. Now, I just showed you there's 4 trillion barrels in Alberta, 3.6 trillion barrels in the United States, they've got a name for this now. I can't think of the name of it. It's not tar sands, but they got another name. And it's locked up in the rocks. Costs about $30 a barrel to get it out. And then we got this big oil pool up in North Dakota. Goes over to Montana. Now that's a small one. That's only got a 0.5 trillion barrels in it. There's two more big pools out here south of the United States, off the Mexican coast, along in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a pool they discovered. It's 35 miles wide, 65 miles long. The Mexicans own that one. And it leads me to believe, gee, I wonder if maybe we're tapping into our big pool, which is on our side of the Gulf, and that's where these big commercial wells are coming in, you know, at 50,000 barrels. A day, 15,000 to 50,000 barrels a day. See, ordinarily these wells, they produce a few hundred barrels a day. I mean, think about it. If you've got a well that produces 100 barrels a day, that's $7,000 a day. You know, $7,000 a day times 365 days in a year is $2.5 million a year. So, you know, if it costs you $30 million to drill a well, you know, that thing pays off, you know, about 10 years. And that's pretty good business. But, you know, they're starting to tap into these super wells. I mean, these aren't just oil wells. I mean, man, these things are just super gushers. And they want them like that because they're under pressure. Now, this pressure down here strikes me as being something that's really super pressure. They might have tapped into something down here that's in the hydraulic pressure range that they hadn't been expecting. And I would suspect that that's what happened. See, they had drilling mud in the hole, and they took the drilling mud out and replaced it with seawater, and the seawater wasn't heavy enough to hold the pressure, and so it got away from them. And, you know, things like that happen. You can't just say, you know, you'll never have an accident, and here's the accident, and blame everybody. But the guy that didn't follow the regular procedure is the guy that's at fault, and that was the BP guy. Everybody else there, including that tool pusher, remember, that left the rig a week before it blew up and went home, told his wife, he said, I'm going to make out my will while I'm here. Things are not right on the rig. And the scuttlebutt on the rig, more than likely, was, hey, listen, there's something going on here. This isn't right. These guys are not following the right procedures. And kind of like the Titanic, you know. Hey, you'd think that we ought to steer south. No, we're not going to slow down. We're not going to steer south. Now, the Brazilians found a big oil pool off their coast, another trillion barrel operation. So now we got the Mexicans. They got a trillion barrel pool. And it may have 5 or 10 trillion barrels in it. They haven't tapped it yet to find out, but they know they got a trillion. And then they got another trillion barrels down off of Brazil. Now, the Saudis have 2 or 3 trillion. Now, they haven't developed all of the oil in Saudi Arabia. See, what we're talking about here, that they say, hey, we've got a trillion barrels, that's proven reserve. That's what we know about. That's what we've proven. And so they tell us about that, but they don't tell us about all these other reserves that are not proven. And the difference is that they don't have any oil wells stuck down in there, and they're not measuring the amount that's down there. But see, National Geographic came out in 82, and they said, hey, how much oil is down there? Well, based upon our estimates, you know, we got a trillion, 2 trillion maybe, 3 maybe, we don't know. Now, we just fought a war over in Iraq. See, they have 25% of the world's proven oil reserves. Well, they haven't drilled all the oil wells that can be drilled in Iraq. So, it's estimated that they've got a trillion barrels or more. So, you know, you got the Saudis over here with 3 or 4. You got the Iraqis with a trillion. And you got the Iranians. See, they're not slouches. And then you've got the Caspian Sea Basin. That's another trillion or 2 trillion barrel catch. And then there's some really big prizes. Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan. They think that they may have several trillion barrels of oil there also. I mean, you know, there's some, and then you got Siberia. And then the Russians stash out of that 8 trillion barrels that's up around the Arctic Circle, you know, and they've got the biggest portion of it. I'd say they got half of it. The Americans probably have a couple trillion. The Canadians probably have a couple, and the Russians got 4 of it. Now, that being the case, boys and girls, the world has plenty of oil. I mean, you know, if you're worried about having enough oil to run around, and that's not the problem. So this blowout down here in the Gulf of Mexico is a pimple on the elephant's trunk. Now, it's going to cause a lot of damage. There's no two ways about that. This may be an act of God. We may even have God's fingerprints on this one, just like Hurricane Katrina. I don't know. I couldn't tell you that positively. But it could well be. And this thing, if it's cavitating, and if they don't get this thing shut off here pretty shortly, this thing may blow out. That is, it may cavitate to such a point. It may blow such a big pipe hole from the bottom to the top that it's going to blow out in some other location through the porous rock up toward the top. And when it does that, it may be coming out of a hole that's maybe, 300-400 yards across. And it may blow off all of that pressure off of that oil pool down there in one big gusher. Now, how much oil is going to come out of that hole over the next 30 years? Well, I showed you here, you've got 547 million, that's 547 million, 500,000, 547 million. 500,000. That's about 548, about 550, round numbers, 550 million acre feet. That would be 550 million acres. Let's just multiply that out. 550123456 divided by 640 acres. That would be 859 square miles. of real estate covered 1 foot deep in oil. Now, here's an interesting little thing that comes out of these oil pools over here that maybe you'd never heard of before. When the pressure is taken off, that represents about 20% of the oil. It'll represent all of the gas, but not all of the oil, only about 20%. Now, if that thing blows off 550 million acre feet, and it has a hole, let's just, you know, imagine that this thing cavitates out, and then you've got a hole over here that's, you know, 100 yards across or something like that, something that's so big that it's impossible to fill it in. Well, then, after all of the gas pressure is taken off of it, then what you have is the other 80% of the oil down at the bottom of the hole, 3 miles down. Now, instead of having a little neat soda straw hole, 8 inches in diameter, or 12 inches, you now have a hole that's maybe 16, 18, 20 feet across, from the bottom to the top, with all of the seawater running down into the bottom to take up that 20% space. Now, as the water cascades down this hole into the oil pool, oil being lighter than the water will float to the top, and it will come up to the top, and we will then have 100%, that's 100% of that oil down there in the Gulf of Mexico. You could, in theory, you could just empty that thing. Now, we only know because we've only got this one hole in there. Now, they might have other holes into this pool that I don't know about, but if that's the case, then I haven't heard that story yet. And I don't know how big this pool is, but, you know, if this pool was a trillion barrels, it would be the size of Lake Mead. Now, can you imagine dumping, you know, a pile of oil into the Gulf of Mexico the size of Lake Mead? I'm just throwing that out there because McLaughlin threw it out, which is certainly within the realm of possibility. Now, there's a prophecy in the scripture. There's actually three of them that talk about this red tide in Revelation 8, for instance. Revelation 11 is another one. Talks about a third of the creatures in the sea being killed by the sea being turned to blood. Now, I would conclude, reading the book of Revelation there, that probably the blood being spoken of there is probably an algae bloom. And I got to thinking about this oil the other day, and I said, gee, I wonder if it could be this oil. Maybe that's the thing that's going to kill a third of the creatures in the sea. Now, already it has destroyed one-third of the fishing industry of the United States. In less than 60 days, it has shut down the entire Gulf of Mexico, well, at least the U.S. portion of the Gulf of Mexico fishing fleet, fishing trade. That's pretty significant. Then the other day, I just heard another little piece came across the news last night. The president says, well, because of this oil spill, we're going to stop oil drilling out in the Gulf. Well, come to find out, there's 150,000 oil workers out there. You see, this isn't the only drilling rig that's working out there. There's a bunch more. In fact, they've got 150,000 people that are engaged in drilling these oil wells out there because we have an energy policy that we're trying to fulfill, and we're trying to balance our books over here, and so this is a good place to go find it. So, you know, talk about black flag operation. Is this the Sierra Club over here? You know, what we need here is something that'll shut down the oil and gas industry here in America. Boy, I can't think of a better, if that was their goal, I can't think of a better modus operandi for accomplishing that goal, because that's what they've done. Right now, as I speak, the whole offshore oil drilling industry is shut down, pending the closure of this well, which may never be closed down. I mean, that thing could run its course. That thing could cavitate out, and you could have the whole oil pool in the Gulf. Boy, that's going to make a mess. And now we're into hurricane season, and when a hurricane comes along, and instead of capturing that oil right close to the oil well. This is why I thought, you know, this doesn't make any sense, because if I was running the show, I would say, well, we need to keep this oil together as close in to this spot as we can get. So I would want to set a perimeter around it, the oil spill, and then I would want to hold that to 10 square miles. I wouldn't want that oil scattered over 38,000 square miles, which is where it is today. They've got oil scattered over 38,000 square miles. So they did not do a very good job of containing the spill. That was number one. And that leads me to believe, hey, somebody's not on top of this. And I don't know if it's the President of the United States, or it's the oil and gas industry, or the BP people, or I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. That's what needed to be done, and I'm not sure who was supposed to be doing that, but whoever it was that was supposed to do it didn't do it. And now it's impossible. There is no way in hell that you can go out over 38,000 square miles of ocean and collect all that oil. On 10 miles of ocean, you could do it. You could do it. Because 10 miles is, just to give you an illustration, is 10 times 640 would be 6,400 acres. Yeah, we could clean up 6,400 acres. Probably even double that. But when you get out there to thousands of square miles, that isn't going to happen. And now that that oil is loose, it's going to wash up on your beaches. Boy, that's going to take a toll. So all of you people in Florida might as well get used to the idea, at least on the Gulf Coast, you're going to have oil on the beaches. And when a hurricane comes in here, you're going to have oil a mile or two inland. And if that thing blows out, you know, and you've got the whole pool up here on the surface, I mean, you could have a foot or two of oil, you know, for a mile or two from the beach inland, scattered for several hundred miles along the Gulf Coast. Boy, you talk about a mess now. And then here's what I heard the other day. They're talking about evacuating you people down there on the Gulf Coast. You know, in the event of a hurricane, in the event that they're unable to contain this, they're going to have to move you people out of Biloxi, Mississippi, and Mobile, Alabama, and maybe even as far over as Pensacola, Florida, and so on. You know, you may have to be evacuated. And I came up to this, and I said, hey, wait a minute. You got several million people down here. Where are you going to put those people? They're all going to be refugees? All right, so if you think that the Twin Towers was a catastrophe, I don't think we've seen the end of this one. Yeah, this thing here is gonna blow out to something even bigger than that. Well, anyway, if this thing runs for 30 years, you've got 550 million barrels of oil. There's 7,619 barrels of oil in 1 acre foot. So that's 71,860 acre feet over 30 years. At the end of 30 years, 20% of the oil will come out of that under pressure. Now, if it doesn't cavitate, and if that thing has been cased all the way down, when 20% runs its course and the pressure is off, it's a simple matter then of just capping it over, and that's the end of it. And the other 80% that's in there is in there to stay. Nobody's talking about pumping it out a mile deep, or in this case, 4 miles deep. That's technology for the 22nd century, I suppose. So that zero pressure, the seawater will fill the cavity, though, if that thing blows out. Then it will float out the rest of that oil in the formation at a much reduced rate, to be sure, but 80% more oil. It won't be coming out at 6,000 pounds pressure, but it'll come out at whatever the water carries it up, and however big the fissure is that's cavitated out, if in fact they didn't case it. And I've never heard anybody say yet on the news whether that thing was cased or not. I don't know. If it wasn't cased, you can rest assured with pressures like that, there was never 6,000 pounds of pressure coming out of that hole there at Lake Mead. You know, a few hundred pounds pressure, but not thousands. This thing here is hydraulic pressure size. I mean, that thing is humongous. I mean, the pressure is humongous. As I pointed out to you last time, we're talking about three nuclear power plant pressures. A nuclear power plant, now remember, is 2,200 psi. In 1918, an Alco locomotive blew up at 1,500 pounds pressure, and they didn't even find the locomotive engineer and the fireman. See, they were vaporized. They were just turned to vapor. And then that was the end of it. This thing here is running at three times that kind of pressure. I mean, that is phenomenal. So don't get mad at the engineers and don't get mad at BP, but BP isn't going to pay for this. The total cost of this thing here is estimated to be at more than $50 billion. BP has spent $1 billion, they said, so far. That's chicken feed. They haven't even scratched the surface. Hell, they're not even picking up the oil yet. They're still out there dinking around with paper towels, what I saw the other day. They had a guy out there with a boat wearing a hazmat suit with paper towels wiping off the stems. That certainly wasn't anything serious about picking up oil. Now, there were some people out there picking up some oil. They've got some suction hoses out there picking up oil. They've got skimmer boats out there picking up oil. They got 1,300 skimmers, they said, out there picking up oil. I don't know what the numbers are, but is the 1,300 boats out there, are they picking up 50,000 barrels a day? Because if they're not, then they're not doing the job. You see, boys and girls, the very bare minimum is 50,000 barrels a day, and that's just enough to keep up with what's coming out of the hole. That doesn't reduce 1 gallon that's been spilled on anybody's beach. And in order to do that effectively, it's got to be done right there at the wellhead, and they're not doing that. They're not even close to that. And they didn't go out and get those six big super tankers from the Persian Gulf and bring them over here, which is what they used 15 years ago. So 15 years ago, they had an oil spill, and they had the technology then to pick up 80% of the oil off of the water with these six tankers. Then they went out with the little skimmer boats and got the rest of it. They're not doing that here. And then that sends me a signal and says, are you sure that these guys are serious about picking this up? It's covering 38,000 square miles. That's impossible to pick up. No help from the other oil companies like we see with the power companies when we have an ice storm. Local officials are hampered by the red tape. The Dutch offered to send 50 ships over here to scoop up the oil, and we rebuffed them. Hundreds of boats are idle in our ports right here. You know, that does not send a signal to me that these people are serious about this. You know, just my observation. So I thought I'd pass that one on to you, and we'll go from there. So if this thing were to run for another 30 years, like it's run right now, all of your fishing industry then down here in the Gulf is dead, isn't it? It's a dead letter issue. And you don't need to be concerned about any more fishing down there, do you? At the end of 30 years, 20% of the oil will have come out of that wellhead based upon past experience. So you've got 30 more years of this thing running just the way it's running right now, unless the relief wells succeed. So there's the current events for the day. We'll be back again tomorrow with more on current events. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.